Blog Talk Radio.
Radio.com, and we are the Middlemen. This is the Middlemen Talk Show, the best show on BlogTalkRadio.com, and I'm Alan.
This is Kevin.
This is Nick.
Yo, we back live. I got my boy Nick Eaton back in the lab with us.
Man, yeah, man. I'm here. How's it been going, man? It's been going good, man. The last couple of weeks been kind of crazy. You know,
How many friend requests have you been added on Facebook since you did the Steve Harvey Show thing?
I've had about close to 150.
Wow.
About close to 150.
Okay, man,
I appreciate all the love everybody's showing me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about, man. You got to support your own, support the people. I mean, you're doing this, you've been doing music for years, man. And, you know, this is, I feel like, man, this is your year, man. I mean, me and Kevin to talk about it, and we feel like this is your year, man.
I'm hoping, man. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm hoping. We're gonna speak it into existence. We're gonna make it happen.
Right.
That's what we're going to do. We're making it happen this year. Execution is the word for the year.
Most definitely. So, of course, everybody, you know, got the support of the Middlemen Talk Show and everybody who's part of our journey. Support Nick E. Go out and get all his music, all his songs, and make sure you pay attention to what he's doing. So, don't want to run across him and be like, I know that guy. I know him.
Hilarious.
But also, you know, we want to, give our remembrance and prayers to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is the weekend that we, you know, celebrate his birthday and all the things which he has done. He's born January the 15th, 1929. The youngest man to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, and he's always will be remembered for his legendary I Have a Dream speech in Washington, D.C. that pretty much my kids and their kids will always hear and always read about and study about, unless they take it out of the history book, which I hope they don't. But, you know, we definitely want to keep him in our remembrance and also make sure that we as a people fulfill that dream, which is a dream for all races. It's not just for minorities, but it is a dream for everybody. Prosperity for everybody. Equality for everybody. We definitely want to keep that with us. Spread the word. Educate our youth. So they can educate their youth when they get older as well too.
You got kids already, man?
No, but I will have some. I plan on it. Hopefully. I do want some. I mean, I'm not even going to lie. I do want kids. I mean, I love kids, so I do want some. But then y'all, 60 single ladies out there want to have some children by me. But you got to meet the criteria.
Oh, Lord.
How
the
babies might be, maybe. Be 100 there.
I ain't getting no younger, man.
Yeah, you ain't getting no younger, man.
No. Approaching 30, man. I'm up in 30 and up club.
There's nothing wrong with 30. It's a great, great age. A great age.
Most definitely.
A
most definitely. Yeah, how's it been going? I mean, you've been MIA as well, too. How's it been going? I said, see you back with us now.
Yes, I've been under the weather the last couple weeks, but I'm better now. And just been busy. Like, how did y'all make a snowman?
No, I did not make a snowman. I mean, you will probably not ever find me outside making a snowman.
Right.
What? Y'all don't want to, like, tap into your inner kid and make a snowman?
I never made a snowman when I was little. I mean, we went outside and had snowball fights, but making a snowman? Mm-hmm. I never did.
Well, I don't even think y'all ever had enough snow in Mississippi to make snowmen. Have you?
Yeah, we didn't enough snow in Georgia to make a snowman. That snow going to be dirty.
In my neighborhood, there's snowmen everywhere.
Yeah, where do you live? You know, tell everybody what you feel, and then that will show why there's snowmen everywhere. Okay? All right. So, those who are just tuning in to the Middleman Show, we have a great show planned for you all today. Title of the segment, are you paying attention to what really is going on? So we're definitely going to bring up some events that's been occurring, you know, across the world, such as things occur within government. We're going to talk about the war on drugs. You know, have our government, well, are our government really doing what they need to do to end it? You know, what has been effective or what has not been effective? You know, we're also going to talk about how the war on drugs affect minorities throughout the country and also, you know, throughout the world. And also, we're going to identify the racial profiling aspect of it, our law enforcement with the war on drugs as well. And also, we're going to talk about Haiti. So are the governing bodies moving fast enough to get that country back on track? Kevin and I had a great discussion this week about Haiti, and we're definitely going to discuss that a little bit more on today's show. And we also have a clip that we're going to play today. Also, if you were able to watch some of the news, if you're in the local area as far as the Memphis area that can pick up the Memphis news station, they recently had a segment on a high school in Memphis called Fraser High School that has a high teen pregnancy rate. They have 90 children who are either parents already within the last school term or are pregnant right now with children in that school. And we're also going to talk about that. What can the school system do to decrease it or educate the children? Are the parents to blame, you know, due to the lack of supervision, you know, of their children? Or a lack of educating their own children about having sex and the consequences about having sex. And also, we're going to briefly discuss and recap, you know, the areas affected by the deaths of the fish and birds and also the floods in Australia. You know, I do have a list of those affected areas where, you know, the fish and bird died. So we're definitely just going to briefly identify those areas for you all today as well.
The Georgia Dome.
Think it's a falcon hater, man. You know what I'm saying?
There was a whole bunch of dead ass birds out of Georgia Dome.
Yeah. So, we got a great show planned for you all today. Please let this once be heard. Call in 718-508-9972. On the chat board. We'll definitely get to your comments on the chat board as well. If you're on Facebook and you see me on Facebook, hey, hit me up on Facebook. Hit Nick up on Facebook if he's still on. I don't know if he's still on, but Kevin is still available on Facebook to talk as well, too. Do I have any questions or any comments that you all want to share with us? Thank you. And anybody else want to address anything before we go to our first break?
I'm ready to get right into it, so let's go ahead.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, let's do it. Let's do it. And first song of the day, we're going to play the song by Common featuring Will.i.am called I Have a Dream.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day.
We
search the brighter days. I write through the maze of the madness. Struggle is my address with pain and crack lips. Gunshots coming from sounds of blackness. Given this game with no time to practice. Born on a blacklist. Told I'm below average. A life with no cabbage. That's no money if you from where I'm from. Funny, I just want some of your son. Dark clouds seem to follow me. Alcohol that my pops swallow bottle me. No apology, I walk with a bulge on my shoulder. It's a cold war, I'm a colder soldier. Hold the same fight that made Martin Luther the king. I ain't using it for the right thing. In between lean and the fiends, hustle and the schemes, I put together pieces of a dream. I still have one.
I got a dream.
One day.
In the mirror, images of me getting much clearer. Dear self, I wrote a letter just to better my soul. If I don't express it, then forever I hold inside. I'm from a side where we out of control. Rap music and the hood play the fatherly role. My story like yours, yo, gotta be told. Trying to make it from a gangster to a godlier role. Red scrolls of stone slaves, the Jewish people in cold cage. Hate has no color or age, flip the page. Now my rage became freedom. Right dreams in the dark, they far, but I can see them. I believe in heaven more than hell. Blessings more than jail. In the ghetto, let love prevail. With a story to tell, my eyes see the glory. And well, the world waits for me to yell. I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day.
Back live on the Middleman Talk Show today. You are listening to the greatest show on blogtalkradio.com. I want to appreciate
the greatest today.
Yeah, it's the greatest show, man. Why not? I'm confident about our show. Shouldn't you be, Nick Eden?
I'm definitely confident about this show. The greatest.
The greatest, man. We're the greatest. Always
the greatest. Greatest.
Well,
anybody else stop hating? Don't be so mad.
If you're just not tuning in to the Middleman Talk Show today, we have a great show planned for you all. Title of the segment, Are You Really Paying Attention to What's Going On? We're going to be discussing the war on drugs. Also, we're going to be talking about Haiti as well. We're also going to bring up the teen pregnancy increase at a local high school in Memphis, South Fraser High School. And we're also going to recap and list the areas affected by dead fish and birds across the world. But we're going to move into our first segment of the day, which is we will be talking about the war on drugs. Our government have for decades been battling the war on drugs. But what are they really doing to put an end to the war on drugs?
So that's they've been initiated. Really
been initiated.
Yeah.
Most definitely. So we definitely want to, discuss that. You know, everybody has their own opinion about what's going on. Well, of course, we hear and see what, you know, the news has been reporting to us. But we all know that the government makes a lot of money off of drugs, you know, every year. So, and I mean, in my opinion, do I feel like they really are they really putting a stop to it? I don't think so, because they could have long time ago. You know, long time ago, when it was like really big with you know, the cocaine and you know, the marijuana, they could have been put a stop to that. But, you know, last year, as we saw, you know, California was trying to get a law passed to legalize marijuana so they can actually put a tax on it, because marijuana was making like millions of dollars, and that can boost the economy over marijuana. So do I feel like they're actually really battling the war on drugs? No. That's my opinion.
But I think that we have to recognize that America is a capitalist society, and they make more money off of drugs being illegal than they would it being legal. For number one, they can't control the black market of the drugs right now. They can't control outside sales like they did with alcohol during Prohibition. That's number two. And look at all the money that they make off probation, drug court, rehabilitation centers. All this, they make millions of dollars a year off of the illegalization of drugs. So, no, I don't think anytime soon we'll see drugs become legal unless they find a way to make more money with it being legal.
I can definitely,
and a lot of people's jobs depend on drugs being illegal. You know, people in the court system, rehabilitation centers, hospitals. It's a lot tied up into it.
Most definitely. Nick, how you feel about it?
Truth be told, I think they have a firm grip on what's going on with the war on drugs because they're facilitating it. They're facilitating the drugs entering the country. The majority of drug dealers who are arrested in this country do not have the financial means to get back and forth from Colombia and the various other places where you can obtain these drugs. There are only three major port states, Florida, Texas, and California.
Right.
So there's no way possible that little Nino down the street selling not dimes and nicks is getting all this stuff in. It doesn't make any sense. It's just like during Prohibition, you know, where you come to find out that the police were a lot of the main factors. It is what it is. And we know that being from Mississippi, because they used to come to Mississippi to get the best liquor.
Exactly. That moonshine. Most definitely. Kevin, you got any opinions you want to address to that question?
Yeah, man. And we can just go back a little bit on the history of it, man. Back in 1875, in San Francisco, they had an ordinance. I mean, you're saying they've been fighting drugs for a long time. They had an ordinance that basically outlawed the smoking or having of opium. And this was directed towards the Chinese man. And you think about it, that's racial profiling back in 1875. Then they went further on to go to outlawing cocaine. And what they did with cocaine, they had a fear that this is a syndrome that they call it. They call it the Negro Cocaine Fiend Syndrome or the coconized nigger. These are terms that they used in the 1900s because they had a fear of black men taking cocaine and raping the women and whatsoever. But throughout time, they always enacted some type of law or something just to try to minimize drugs or make these people go out and get licensing just like you would with alcohol to be able to sell these products. But it wouldn't work because, like alcohol, anybody can get it and sell it. So it didn't work for them.
Right.
They also had an act that was called, ironically, the Harrison Act and the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937. It went along with Prohibition, but that didn't work too well because people were still selling their weed, growing how they want to grow it. So, I mean, as I'm just notating right here, it's been going on for a long time. And regardless of what they do, people are going to get drugs. And, I mean, they say as of last year, man, 12.7 million people used illegal drugs last year.
But also through history, it's been a way to subdue and to, I guess, neutralize communities. Like in California during the 1960s when the Black Panthers were on a rise, they were really unifying the black community, and the FBI and the CIA decided that they needed a way to ununite the black community, a way to what they called neutralize black community, so they wouldn't unite together, so they wouldn't stick together, so they would turn against each other. And drugs were a big part of that, putting drugs into the black system, and it took down the beginning of really, you know, the Black Panthers, who, you know, I guess throughout time have been, I guess, labeled as, you know, radicals, but they really started some really great programs in this country and really had a good system and a good unifying and growing theme for the black community, which was destroyed by the government putting drugs in the black community.
Right. And it's funny that you say that, because the next question that we really want to get into is, you know, how has the war on drugs affected minorities in the country? You know, we saw last year where they, you know, I forgot what state it was, that the police officers were given the privilege to stop any minority who they feel like...
Arizona.
Yeah. During traffic stops to do searches, you know, in their car. Like, if they didn't speak English or they didn't have the right paperwork, that they had the right to search their car. And also, we did, over the past couple of decades, we've always seen the increase in the incarceration rate due to people being placed in jail due to drugs. And, of course, we had the law, you know, due to the amount of ounces that you had, that's the amount of years that you would serve in the jail. I think they went back and redid that. But how has that affected minorities as far as on the war on drugs, you know, with our country? I mean, you feel like we have a negative stigma on us as far as being labeled as drug smugglers by our government?
Well, what they say, 1 out of 9 black males are in jail right now or have been in jail because of drugs. 1 out of 100 American citizens has been in jail because of nonviolent offenses. So, I mean, it's really affecting us from that standpoint, because once you go to prison, you get that prison record, you are you're not employable. You can't get a job. You can't be productive. So they're stuck in that cycle from that standpoint.
I think that
drugs have been used as one of the most effective tools towards genocide of minorities in this country. As far as you look at young people and their perception, it was a period of time and still very prevalent where that was a cool thing to be, was a drug dealer, was the guy on the corner with the quick buck. It has infiltrated hip-hop. The media advertises it, it promotes it, but while it's still illegal, pulling a lot of young people into a world where they're setting themselves up for defeat. We leave the prison system. We leave mothers without fathers. We leave children without fathers. We basically let ourselves become susceptible to the genocide, and drugs is what they use to control that.
Okay. We have a caller here, y'all. We got a caller right here. Y'all can let us get this caller right quick. Caller, you live on the Middleman Talk Show.
Hello?
Hey, what's up, Charlie?
Hey, what's up, man? This is a very, 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 very heated subject, one that I've been talking about. I think Jen is on point when she talks about drugs being a genocidal tool. And let me give you a quick history lesson right quick, because those of you who may have been following me on Twitter know that I'm constantly talking to rappers about the need for social commentary. But if you look at the way this cut the drugs, let's just say from the 60s on, whatever government, or country we go to war with, for some reason, their drug of choice winds up in our streets. If we go back to the heroin epidemic that took place in the 60s and 70s, we were fighting at the time the Vietnamese. And the Vietnamese, at one point in time, especially with the help of the United States, and this has been documented, the CIA sort of looked the other way while heroin was smuggled in the body of dead souls.
Yep.
Okay? And this coincided at the same time when it hit the streets, when black people were in the streets demanding their rights.
Most definitely.
All right. Let's speed up to the 80s when the cocaine epidemic hit us. At the time, our government was in a conflict, or a low-intensity war with Nicaragua. We were trying to prevent Nicaragua from going, quote-unquote, communist.
Okay.
Yes. All right. But the Congress had outlawed money being funneled directly for a war to the Contras. So at that point, the government had to figure out a way to continue the war against the Sandinista government in Nicaragua.
Right.
Without using American money.
Most definitely.
What happened was the Contras came up with the brilliant idea, we can sell cocaine. And the CIA was implicit in this cocaine sale. That's been documented by Gary Webb. It's also the CIA investigated themselves and even said, okay, yeah, we may have known about it and didn't do anything to stop it. All right. Now, if you are involved in a war or in a war and you need money through an illicit drug to continue to fund that war, and you're dumping that money or that drug into the black community, then you have to socially engineer the black community into accepting it. Now, those of you who are old school hip hoppers, remember when the crack wasn't seen as a hip thing to do. Remember the slogan, crack is whack?
Yep.
That was a main thing in hip hop. Crack heads and crack dealers were looked at as a bad thing.
Right.
But when corporate America got its hands on gangster rap,
look what's going on there.
Quack is whack to Easy the Snowman.
Right.
Most definitely. And you cannot tell me, given history, given my understanding of history, given the motion of history as it is, that this was not a planned out or a thought out thing on some level.
Of course. I mean, everything that we experience that is a new fad or whatever, is always a plan behind it. It's always a plan to market a particular race. It's always a plan to target a particular age group, maybe a particular, gender. So, yes, I mean, most definitely, I can definitely agree with that. Most definitely. I mean, we see it every year. There's always something new every year that is going to, take over a certain amount of, gender of people, race, and age group of certain people. Most definitely.
Yes, sir.
Charles, do you have anything else you want to comment on that?
Well, I think that what's most important for black people now is we've got to figure out a way to socially engineer our people into looking at the drug dealer and drugs as the enemy to black people. Okay? Now, I bring that up because I know a lot of people get sensitive when I say this because they have relatives who may be in the game or was in the game. Big deal. We all do. But if we don't stop this epidemic, if we don't stop this folk heroization, and I know that's not a word, but this hero romanticizing the drug deal, what will happen is the next generation of youth, when the next drug gets dropped on them, they won't have the moral fortitude to resist it, either to sell or to smoke.
I mean, I can definitely wholeheartedly agree with that, because we can see the trends of the different types of drugs that hit our youth in different decades. We had like in the early part of the 2000s where, ecstasy was introduced, and Xanax and all those types of drugs were introduced. There was a big explosion of youth using those particular type drugs, and then you had the date rape drugs that were, used as well too. So of course, I mean, I can definitely see that. Then also we had the big pandemic of methamphetamine, for the last past 5 years.
And for our white listeners out there, I want you to understand that crystal methamphetamine was the poor white man's crack. And as you see these more Tea Partiers and all these other things happening, you're going to see an increase in a drug of choice for poor whites to calm them down. Remember my prediction. This is what? What's today? 5:30. What's the date?
January 16th.
Remember, I told you this. And I'm going to predict where it's going to hit first. You want me to give you a prediction where I think what state's going to hit, it's going to get hit with it first? Arizona. God knows they need something in Arizona. Those people crazy. Those people crazy. They might need it.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Most definitely. No. But, Well, also want to get to the next part of the question of today as well, as far as the racial profiling aspect of the war on drugs. You know, how much does that, you know, play on the role of what our law enforcement agencies are doing to minorities? I feel like every police officer is trained on racial profiling to an aspect. You know, we're always, as far as African Americans, have always looked at it being the criminal race. Now we have the Hispanic race as looked at being the more criminal race, or the illegal aliens or drug smuggling type race. But as we talked about on one of our previous shows, you know, we saw a trend to where the Hispanic race is reproducing much faster than the African American race. So maybe in the next 40 years, they will potentially be the majority. Now, do we feel like the racial profiling aspect of that will still be affecting them as far as in the war on drugs if they become the majority?
Absolutely.
How do you feel about that, Charlie?
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen. Hold on. I'm going to give you a perfect example of why I believe. Because, I mean, historically, they have been racially profiled like we have been racially profiled. I think the difference has been our leadership has spoken up about the racial profiling of African Americans, but Latinos get racially profiled just the same. And if you look at the amount of prejudice that's against Latinos, particularly Mexican Latinos, I mean, there are Mexican people who were born and raised in this country whose family can trace their lineage back generations. Yet, you have people wanting to pass laws to force them to prove their citizenship and identity.
Most definitely.
You know, that sounds like South Africa. You know, let me see your ID.
I just recently started watching the TV show Weeds that comes on Showtime. And, you know, for me, it was like, at first I was thinking, damn, it's funny. And I was like, it's a lot of racial undertones to this, but it's a lot of what's going on in that show. You can really equate that to a lot that's going on within drugs in America. Here you have this suburban white lady who starts selling drugs. She moves from weed to larger quantities of weed to, you know, start out trafficking, you know, across the state lines. And in the entire scope of the show, I'm up to maybe like the fourth season now, everyone that she gets involved with is of another race, and they all end up dead. And it's just a mirror of what's going on right now. The profiling is going to keep on, because they're going to automatically think, oh yeah, that the Latino guy, he's definitely the drug dealer, or the black guy, he's the drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
White lady? No, mm-hmm. She's not the drug dealer. No, she's not.
Let me tell y'all this too as well. You know, of course, the DEA, they sit down every year. They look over the statistics, over the drug arrests from the previous year, and they break it down by race, gender, age, and nationality. So, of course, they predict what's going to happen within the next year, the amount of arrests they're going to, you know, have, the amount of searches in which they're going to have, the areas in which they're going to target, you know, for the next year. So, of course, they're going to target those areas in which we have more minorities coming in, such as like your Texas, Arizona, you know, New Mexico, Florida, places like that where they can actually come in with these particular drugs. So, of course, it will be like Jen said earlier, you know, drugs are dependent on certain people's jobs. So if we didn't have these particular drugs coming in, a lot of those jobs in which we had and a lot of those particular statistics that they look at would be invaluable to them.
And I think that goes to where you have to recognize it's not that they automatically think that it's the minority doing it. I think they know it's an excuse to enact the genocide that goes on daily. And I think more people need to recognize that there is an attack on a minority community. Over, like Charlie said, over the last year, look at the boom. As soon as they announced that whole thing about, you know, Hispanics will take over the majority, you know, as far as race in America, you know, over the last, you know, I mean, the next 40 years, you have seen the whole push with, you know, the racial profiling with Latinos, you know, go back to Mexico, you know, all this stuff. But they used them when they did need them, like for migrant workers and for low-income jobs. But now, because of this fear, because of the fear of someone else taking over, or fear of another race being, you know, more popular or bigger than the quote-unquote colonial lead race that's in there now, they have an attack, a genocide on minorities, and people need to recognize that.
I got a comment off the chat board right here. Naomi1908 said, racial profiling is trained to help officers take quick assessment of a situation and do something. It isn't called that for clear reasons. So I guess I'm assuming that she really don't think it's racial profiling, just to assess the situation and take action.
Okay, all right. Let me show you how racial profiling is. So, if you look at the drug arrest, there was a professor of criminal justice at the University of Southern Mississippi who, about maybe 10 years ago, and I forget this professor's name, but you can look his research up.
Okay.
He did a study on drug arrest and found out that more whites get arrested for drugs. But guess who got convicted more?
Us. Minorities.
Blacks and Latinos. Precisely.
Look
at the numbers. If you look at the numbers of people who are using drugs, who are involved in the drug trafficking, you'll find it's more white. Okay, y'all, I've got to take this call. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. That's fine. I appreciate it, Charles. But yeah, most definitely. I mean, the information is out there. The statistics is out there. And I know we covered pretty much some of this on our previous shows about racial profiling, but that information is out there. I remember learning about that in college. So, but that was a great discussion on the war on drugs. We're going to try to move into...
Hold on before you do that, man. Naomi wanted to clarify. She said she was told that by an officer, and she said she couldn't believe that she was told that by a black officer.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I think I understand what she's saying. I talked to policemen before, and during police training, the profile that they set up for the criminal is someone in an urban community, a minority. That when they train, that's who they train to look at. So, you know, it trickles. You have to look up top, because the person up top is telling these, you know, a lot of times they're not prejudiced. That's what they tell these people, whether they're white or black or whoever. They tell them, this is who you're supposed to go after. And that's their job. And hey, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of them just are doing their job. And, you know, it doesn't make it right, but we must start attacking from the top.
Well, one thing that we all miss is the fact that this is, like Al said earlier, this is a money-type situation. Everything boils back to money. You said it also, Jen. It equals jobs. It equals all these different types of situations for these people. So if you have a gambit of people that's on drugs, using drugs, involved with drugs, enforcing against drugs, that equals money all the way around. And it ain't got nothing to do with trying to protect the community when it comes to this whole so-called war on drugs.
Most definitely.
You got another
call,
y'all.
Y'all
just get to this call.
That's
right.
A love of capitalism.
All right. Caller 678, you're live on the Middleman Talk Show.
Hey, what's happening, fellas? What's going on with y'all?
What's going on,
you're
brother?
Good,
how you doing?
Caller?
What's
going
on?
Hey, this
dang
good people. Peace, y'all.
What's
going on? Long time no hear. Yeah, man. I was just listening to what y'all was talking about, man. I mean, you know, in my line of work,
as a PO, I see the you know, the legal system from a very inside point of view. I mean, I have to go to court on a regular basis, and you are right in the sense that it all really does boil down to money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I've been sitting in court enough to, I've seen the difference between the way they sentence some white people as opposed to where they sentence some minorities. I mean, you might get a minority, you know, like I was sitting in court one day, man. This girl was in there. She was about to get sentenced. It was her first drug case ever in her life. The judge gave her like a 12-year sentence, served 7 years.
Wow.
And it's Judge Jason Deal, the governor's son. His son is a Superior Court judge out here in Hall County.
Mm-hmm.
All of that's public record and stuff like that. But I mean, there was another sentence that I was privy to, where it was like four college kids, all white boys. Of course, they went around in a car. If I have the facts correct about the case, they went around in a car and were shooting out of the car.
With the paint gun, shooting homeless people.
No, I think they were shooting like a real gun. Like they shot through like an Arby's window. They shot, this lady was in the car, like,
yeah,
they shot through her window. All of them got straight probation. They going around with a pistol now, shooting, almost killing people. I mean, they're shooting at businesses. I mean, one bullet went through a lady's car, if the information is correct. And they gave all of them first offender sentences, which means if they just complete their probation sentences, they don't have to, they won't have a felony conviction on their record. But yet and still, the black girl that was in there, it's her first offense ever. She wasn't out there shooting and almost killing anybody. You know, I mean, they just caught her with a little bit of drugs. She has to do 7 years behind that.
Well, Dane, I'm going to ask you this question right here. You know the answer to this question real quick. Who makes America the most money? Who always has made America the most money?
Who has made America the most money? I mean, from based on the discussion, I mean, the crime. Crime
well,
makes the most
which,
money.
Which
all that drug
group,
money they seize.
Which ethnic
and
group
even,
made America the most money?
I'm sorry? Oh, black
which
people.
Which ethnic group made America the most money?
Oh, black people. That's most definitely. I mean, the country was established and built on our backs.
So
you know, free labor.
If I can't get you out there in the field, I'm going to get you in the courts. And what is prison called?
Right. And,
so, I mean,
another thing, like you, to touch on what you were saying earlier, like it all ultimately boils down to money, man. I mean, because working as a probation officer, I mean, if you're down in the county jail and you get sick enough and they don't, and your let's say your medication costs so much money, they'll let you out of jail. It all boils down to money. They don't want to spend that money on you.
Okay.
You know, and that's why they give a lot of people probation. That way it costs money to keep you in jail.
Well, man,
you know,
this question, man. How much is the court system really making off this whole probation racket?
Man, they make a killing, man. They make a killing because every offense carries a fine.
And Dane, you can testify.
Yeah.
So this the new thing that's happening now is they are sentencing a lot of people to what rehabilitation centers that you have to pay for out of your own pocket. They sentence you to go to a rehabilitation center, and these places cost $200 or $300 a week.
Oh yeah. I mean, like drug rehab is huge, big business. I mean, there are some drug treatment facilities that, I mean, some of the big drug treatment facilities, I mean, it costs like $7,000-$8,000. That's just to get.
Right. Now, my question I have a question, Dave. Now, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but this is a question that I always wonder. Okay, when they do those big drug seizures and, you know, they get all the drugs, you know, what do they do with the drugs? I mean, because of all those years and all those drug seizures that they have, what do they do with the drugs?
Put them back on the street, dog. You know what they do with that.
Right.
I mean, I
just wanted to hear from a law enforcement about it.
I'm not an actual police officer, so I can't say specifically what they do with it. But, like, I talk to my buddies at the sheriff's department all the time, like,
they do make money from some of the things that they seize. Like, if they seize weapons and stuff like that, like, they'll in turn, it's a place that they sell them to, that they make money off of the some of the weapons that they seize. So, in essence, right, those weapons eventually go back out into the world. Because exactly, they sell them to somebody legitimately, and then those people will in turn, you know, legitimize the weapons and resell them. You know, that same Glock that killed somebody or was involved in a crime is back out down the street somehow.
That's real crazy, man. I know they making money. That's what it all equals up to, man. Making money.
Man,
look how much money they make on police impound.
Oh man, houses, cars, boats. I want
them boats. Yeah, I don't know if the police make money off the impound. I know the impound lot gets broke off. But back to the money thing. They'll give a whole bunch of people probation and stuff like that, and basically keep them out on the streets. That way, you can pay the county, because every single crime has a fine that you're going to have to pay for. So instead of them keeping you in jail, which is costing them money, they'd rather have you out. That way you can pay your fines, you know, that way the county gets the money, the state gets the taxes, that way, you know, when the county pays taxes on the money that you in turn give them as revenue,
right,
in the form of fines and stuff like that.
Right, right.
We're going to appreciate those comments, you know what I'm saying, Dan, coming from an inside source. But we're going to try to switch gears. We're going to talk about Haiti for a few minutes. With the reconstruction of Haiti, do you all feel like the governing bodies are moving fast enough to get this country back on track? Now, Kevin identified to me earlier this week. Kevin, could you talk about as far as, you know, how their money rolls as far as them being, one of the richer third world countries, something like that you were talking about?
No, I don't know if a lot of people are aware of. As far as the history, where Haiti came from, Haiti was one of the first enslaved countries to basically fight for the freedom from the French. They defeated the French. And a lot of people really don't realize that when you gain your freedom like that, you basically own and control your own wealth. Well, they put a blockade around the country, and I'm going to give a brief history on this as best as I can. They blockaded the country off, kind of starved them down to where they had to say, okay, we'll break to your demand. You can't beat us, you know, like in a fight. So they blockade them off. They was like, hey, give us your trees. They stripped all the land, the resources to a certain degree, and that's why Haiti looks like it looks. And on the other side, you see Puerto Rico, it's still beautiful over there. Think about it. This is the same country. You got one side with Puerto Rico where people
Republic
go visit.
Too. Like on the other side, the Dominican Republic is just
I'm sorry. Correct me, Jen. But the Dominican Republic, you go over there, people go over there for vacation. It's beautiful and all. You're going over to Haiti. Haiti
all
was beautiful, but not to that point. Now, what they're doing right now, in my opinion, what me and Al was talking about, think about all the things that happened with Haiti. And I'm one of these conspiracy theorists. I truly believe that Haiti was caught in a situation where the resources, the gold, the zinc, and all these other minerals that they have over there, they didn't want to give that up. So something happened to them, and it was the earthquake. Now, how can you have an earthquake on one side or not the other? I'm perplexed by that. But with Haiti and all the monies that they received as of late, which America raised $1.4 billion for these people, you look over there right now, you please tell me, how does Haiti still look the same as it did the day that the earthquake happened? I'm not understanding
it. It still looked the same as the day as Katrina happened. How the hell does Mississippi look the same as the day as Katrina happened?
But at the same time, the notion of capitalism
it still has its hand in every single thing that America touches. Capitalism has its hand in it with Haiti. Like, all the money that was spent, Haiti was bad. Haiti was really bad even before the earthquake came. So we have to look at it that I saw a special before the earthquake about children, like about families selling their children off to other families just to get by. And this was before the earthquake, so Haiti was already pretty bad.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what I was saying, what happened to them, and that led to the point to where it is now. But when you have a situation like you were saying, Nick, as far as New Orleans, we spent 60% of the money that we raised on New Orleans. We spent 60% of it. Over here, we haven't spent nowhere near the amount of money that we raised. Man, out of that 1.4, man, only 38% of that money has been used for recovery and the rebuilding. 38% opposed to 60%, man. Come on.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's $1,500 per person.
Like you just said that the Dominican Republic was on the other side as a resort and stuff like that. Don't you think that they want more land to make more money off vacation spots?
Oh, yeah, but they got to eliminate that bloodline. When you think about it, Haiti, they don't want to have that bloodline to run. The people that fought, those people are proud. They don't like you to hand them nothing. Haitians are proud people, and if you ever met one, you know it.
Exactly.
One thing that angered me about the Haitian situation, I had a disagreement with a friend who is Caucasian about, I disagreed with the adoption of Haitian children by, like, people in Iowa. I still disagree with that. I think that was a form of raping that society. You know, Jane and John from Iowa have no idea about Haitian culture. I don't know about Haitian culture. You know, like, I just think that to rob those children and just take them and adopt them into American society, I don't like that.
Jen, I mean, this is one thing you have to look at, and you can call us the conspiracy theorist in me, but Jane and John have no idea about Haitian culture. That's fine and dandy. But John is probably in the military. John is going to raise that child. That child is going to go into the military. Let's not get it twisted. Damn near everyone that we've gone to war with in the Middle East, even in Cuba, we've put them in power. We've trained them. Many of the terrorists who come back and have tried to lead attacks on the United States have been members of our armed forces and have been trained by American soldiers at one point or another. You know, call it a conspiracy theory, but the truth of the matter is what happens. And this is a damn good excuse for them to say, hey, let's go ahead and get some people now. We'll send them over there to take out whoever's in power and, you know, hope to hell that they don't turn on us like everybody else did. Well, I don't think Haitians are terrorists, but I mean, like Jen said, they want that land.
Yeah, but they want that land. They want to do whatever they can do.
The ex-president of Haiti, the one that I think, he's not president now, but I know we had something to do with that military coup that took over when he became president. I know he had something to do with that because he was over here chilling with, what's his name, Bill Clinton.
Yep.
Looking all crazy and stuff like a puppet.
The movie Avatar, a lot of Avatar was based on what happened to the Haitians. The whole thing about the trees and how they were connected in their ancestors through the trees and believing in that. That movie was largely, you know, some of it was about what happened to Haiti.
Well, what about the, I'm looking at some of the things that was raised up, man. I mean, Doctors Without Borders, man, they spent $166,000 a day, and they said that transportation alone cost $19 million. I mean, they're spending money over there, but is it going to help the infrastructure of these people? What are we going to be looking at next year about this time? I mean, what's really going on?
Yep. What country will be affected next time, you know, to that magnitude? So,
most definitely.
I can definitely agree with it. So, we're going to go into our next break, you know what I'm saying, of the particular hour. We want to thank everybody for listening to the Middleman Talk Show. Please stand by and, hey, got comments after this break, we'll definitely get them on top. Let's get into it. This is Life. It's X.
Hey, yo. I see most cats will take advantage of you right now. But I ain't gonna do that, huh? I'm gonna give you the game, right? I'm gonna give it to you because I would want somebody to give my little girl the game when she just found her S.E.
Life is real. Heard you just turned 17 and finally got some hips. Hustlers on the block go crazy when you lick your lips. but they just want relation. They don't want relationships.
Welcome to the real world.
It ain't the same. Fellas old enough to be your daddy, know your name. Everybody's talking about how much that girl has changed. Can't quite put your finger on it, but you're feeling strange. Like it's fire in your veins.
Talk show, that was Life Jenny S-E-X, and that was the reason why we chose to play that song today. We have a different clip that we pulled from a Memphis station. It's about a local high school in Memphis, Tennessee, called Fraser High School, which has a really high teen pregnancy rate. They have 90 kids who have either are already parents or they're pregnant right now with children. And we have a clip that we're going to play from the local news station about this particular article. So go off pay attention to this particular clip and listen to the young lady and her responses to some of the questions the reporter asked her. Kevin, you want to go ahead and get that?
I think these girls are making agreements with each other to kind of see who, you think it's an agreement or it's a pact.
The Action News 5 investigators uncovered a secret inside the Fraser community. At least 90 girls at Fraser High School are pregnant or have had babies within the school year. Tonight, one of those teenage mothers is talking for the first time only on 5. Good evening, I'm Joe Birch.
I'm Ursula Med, and we have just learned from the Tennessee Department of Education those 90 girls make up roughly 20% of the female population at Fraser High. Action News 5's Jamel Major has a story you'll see only on 5.
Ursula, sources tell me the number of pregnancies inside the school could be even higher. Now, we talked to one teenage mom who says more must be done to prevent students from getting pregnant.
I'll be sleepy.
Terrica Sutton is getting used to the challenges of being a teen mom. Her two-month-old daughter, Kamaya, definitely keeps the 16-year-old Fraser High student busy.
In the morning time, she'll wake me up about 5, and I get up and find me somewhere at school, and I get her dressed. If she goes somewhere, like her dad keeps her sometimes, and get ready for school.
Terica is just one of approximately 90 girls at Fraser High who have either had a baby or who are expecting this year. Terica says she was 5 months along when she found out she was pregnant. Her parents and classmates were stunned.
And they were like, Terica, I never knew you would get pregnant. I was like, well, it happened.
Roughly 20% of the female student population at Fraser High is already experiencing the trials of parenthood.
It's a shame that all these girls at Fraser are pregnant, but it ain't nothing new.
I asked Terica why so many girls like her at Fraser High are ending up pregnant.
Some girls try to do it because they think it's cute. Some be an accident.
So you think these girls are making agreements with each other to kind of see who, you think it's an agreement or it's a pact or?
They probably, plan what they're going to do to get pregnant. I'm not telling.
Terica says educators need to do more to try to help prevent teen pregnancies.
They need a class where they can teach like the girls before they get pregnant and use protection and stuff. And don't try to get pregnant.
And Action News 5 is committed to following this story. Stay with us for details on a pregnancy prevention initiative that's expected to roll out later this month. Live in the studio, Jamel Major, Action News 5.
And that was a local clip from the Action News 5 in Memphis, Tennessee, about a local high school called Fraser High School. They reported, having, approximately 90 kids who have had a baby or are currently pregnant at that particular school within this school year. And, please remember, school just started back in August, and it's just now January. So 90 little girls at the school are either parents or will become parents within this school year before it's over. So, my question to that is, what can the school do, to decrease the pregnancy, or to educate these children? Now they're trying to put something in place due to the high pregnancy rate, but why didn't they have anything in place back in the day, to prevent this?
Naomi said that she said there needed to be correction. She said there are 180 kids having kids. She may be from the area, I don't know.
My question is, why are we looking at the teachers and the school system? Why are we not looking at the community? Why are we questioning the school system about how people are raising their children? If you look at it from this
Jen, the amount of hours that a child spends in a day is where? At school. The most of the time they're at school.
I agree with Jen. It ain't their responsibility. I don't care how long you at school, man. That stuff.
I don't need to ask.
If I'm at
home. Your responsibility is your family and your community. That is the community's responsibility and the family's responsibility. Now, the community can use the school as a tool to try to help, better their community, but to be totally dependent and blame teachers and the school system, no. You blame, where were the parents when this stuff was happening? Where were the community? Where was your preacher? Where was your neighbor? Where was the people in the kids' life that mean something? Your teacher, that's her job. But the people in your community that love you, that know you, that take care of you, that's their responsibility.
And if they do take an interest on you, that means that's just an extra additive help for you from that teacher.
Right. That's right. I mean, we got to also look at it, too. A lot of kids don't have that good support system at home. So, of course, their major support system would come from a school or a school-based type program. So if they're not getting an education at home as far as about that, where else can they get it from? Like Jen said, you can't get it from your community and your churches. But if that kid is not involved in church, if that kid is not involved in anything in the community, where else can they get it from? They can get it from school.
Hold on for a second. Let me read y'all this quote, and then just let me say one quick thing. This quote is actually from Otto Frank. He's the father of Anne Frank. If anybody's familiar with the diary of Anne Frank, she was a Holocaust
victim who wrote her diary while during the Holocaust. But he said, all children must look after their own upbringing. Parents can only give good advice or put them on the right path. But the final forming of a person's character lies in their own hands. At some point, people have got to take responsibility for what they do. And I'm sorry, when you're in high school, whether you may have a skewed view of life, but you know, if I have sex without protection, there's a greater chance of me getting pregnant. My mother said this a long time ago. She said, nowadays, people are having babies because they want to, because there is so much birth control out there. There are condoms, male and female. There are spermicides. There are morning after pills. There are birth control pills. There are Depo-Provera shots. There are every type of birth control you could think is out there. And no, they're not 100% successful, but I'm sorry, 90 or 180 kids at one school, y'all just ain't using no damn protection. And at some point, you cannot blame the parents for everything. You cannot, you damn sure can't blame the school, because first off, these people have families themselves they're trying to take care of. Second off, this is their job. There has to be some personal accountability for this.
I also think that children of this generation live in a, not all children, but a large majority of them live in a delusional state. A lot of them truly believe, I think a couple years ago, Fantasia had a song saying it's a badge of honor to be a baby mama. A lot of them live in a very delusional state about reality, where, you know, I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. And a lot of these girls and boys are searching for love. And I think that, yes, they are responsible for themselves, but also our community. The Bible says, I don't hate to quote the Bible, but I will quote the Bible. The Bible says, raise up a child, give them the tools, and they will not go astray. A lot of people, communities, parents, are not planting the tools. Now, if I implant the tools in you and you still go astray, it's on you. But at some point, the seed has to be planted. And a lot of times, the seed of what's right and what's wrong is not being implanted in these children.
Okay.
If you can't take care of yourself, and I'm sorry, 11-year-olds know this. If you can't take care of yourself, you damn sure can't take care of somebody else.
But they're delusional. They don't think it's like that. They see a baby, they see love, they see this. They don't see the reality of what it is like to take care of another human being. A lot of them are delusional.
Very true. Well, we have a caller, y'all. Let's get to this caller right quick. Caller 816, you're live on the Middleman Talk Show.
Hi, this is Naomi.
Hey, what's going on?
1908. I just wanted to go on and say that first I posted that the news clipping, it said there were 90 students having kids. Well, actually, we need to correct that, because if there's 90 girls pregnant, that impacts another 90 boys, because those girls did not get pregnant on their own.
Right.
So that's where the 180 came from. And then also, as we're looking through it, it is not the responsibility of the school to provide some kind of abstinence or birth control or some kind of training. That needed to start in the home, because that young girl said that her parents and everybody was shocked when they found out she was 5 months pregnant. That means your parents were unaware of your sexual activity for at least 5-6 months.
Probably more
there's a disconnect in that home. And then also a comment of project kids with project parents equal project babies. That is definitely not true, because I was raised in a single parent, teenage parent home, and I turned out just fine. My mother instilled the values that you need to be a lady, you need to go to school, and you need not have kids until you can take care of a kid. So somewhere between going to school and coming home, somebody didn't have the communication that they needed to have with their parents and their children. And what it ultimately boils down to, we need to take responsibility and be accountable of our own persons.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
At 14, 15 years old, you know what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think earlier than that, they know what they're doing, because the way the media is set up, everybody's, the music, the television, the movies,
your surroundings, everybody around you. Sex is pushed out like air.
Right.
Sex is like
air
to these kids now. It's nothing new to them. Just like
those kids
know
what they're doing.
With
but
the
consequences
girls,
of the reality, I think they don't can't comprehend. They're children.
No. What world are you living in right now, Jen? They comprehend.
Jen. Think about when you were
no,
a
they
child.
Don't.
Think about when you were a child.
People that are grown and married and have houses don't realize all the complexities that come with being a parent and raising children and
yeah.
you know, struggle with it. So
there's a big difference between not realizing something and not accepting. It's just like Naomi said. The seeds were planted, but she still made the choice. She follows the choice. You have people that may have been, you have five people raised in a house, and four kids will go one way. They're all talking the same thing. Four kids will go one way, and one child is going to go completely opposite. It's still a personal choice. Don't act like you weren't a child at some point. You knew the difference between right and wrong.
I think because someone planted a seed in me that if I chose to go wrong, because I have done wrong, I chose to go, you know, many times being a stupid kid. But someone planted a seed in me where it was always in me where I knew I was making a choice whether right or wrong. A lot of these kids aren't having that seed planted in them.
Yeah, hold on. We got another call in here. Hold on 1 second. Naomi, you still on the line?
I'm here.
Okay. Hey, what's up, Dub?
Mic check 1212. What's good, world?
What's going on, Dub, man? Long time no hear.
Oh, man. You know, I've been banging back from the flu, man. So I'm back on deck and jumping off in this one. But I'm just a quick question while you talking about this now, man. Just agree with the statement I put on the chat line. That's fine. But just a quick question. Where were you born? I mean, where were you raised at? Let me ask you that. What project were you at? Was it in the Frazier community?
No, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay, well let me give you this bit a piece about this. I know about this place. I've been to this place. I deal with a lot of people from this place. I got a lot of projects that's from them those projects and that place in particular. The majority of the people there, of the younger generation that have kids that are going to this school, their parents are more worried about the cars and whose business is doing this and who's smoking this and who's doing whatever, whatnot. And these kids are just out and about doing whatever. And it's cool to have some sex. It's cool to go ahead and wild out and do whatever. When I said that, I was talking about in that particular, I wasn't talking because I know a lot of people that came out of projects predicaments that have raised themselves into something great and are very essential to humanity right now. But in that particular spot right there, this is not the first time something of this magnitude has happened. This is an ongoing situation that if you go do some research on that, you'll see it's happened before in the Memphis community. Memphis is one of the poorest places, of course, we know in the U.S., with a lot of social injustices, shall we put it that way. And when you look at what's going on with these kids are basically raising themselves. We went through a phase of when we was coming up, people in our age bracket, when you had 80s and stuff, not me in particular, but you had a lot of people that was raising themselves out of those projects with crackhead mamas and everything, and they were brought into that project lifestyle and they had to raise themselves. Right now, in that particular spot, a lot of those kids are raising themselves right now because the parents are either out there or they wilding out or they still have that young energy in there and they not really too much paying attention to their kids right then and there. So
but this is something we said is not the teacher's job, but the teacher still can play that role model.
But on the flip side, you go back into, you have no home training for one. So you coming into the school, you trying to be a hard, steadfast role model and trying to be something positive in somebody's life.
But a lot of those
same
kids
time,
still have
dealing with a
problem, man.
When you're dealing with somebody who's come from those circumstances, I'm gonna get away from just using a project situation.
Right.
When you deal with somebody from those type of situations and circumstances, it's hard to pull somebody just so great that's just doing so well for themselves and is trying to help you, and you got 20 people sitting right here around you who is doing the worst and the negative and either getting over or getting messed over. And it's kind of hard to say, okay, well, I need to be like them when I'm looking at this. I'm with this every day. I'm with you for maybe, depending on how the classroom is set up, I might be with you for 4 or 5 hours. I'm with you for the rest of the day.
It goes back on that child, too, Doug. You know, even though, you know, Jen say a seed has to be put, I think a lot of kids, when they make a personal choice for themselves to be, hey, I'm tired of living like this. I don't want to look around my life and see these surroundings forever. Make those changes.
They can make those changes, but again, it's a personal preference, and you know, I understand the aspect of argument here, but let's keep it all the way 100. When you deal with those circumstances, it's hard to get pulled from those circumstances, a.k.a. that's why you have that revolving door of those circumstances.
And I think a lot of kids don't envision them. I've had this argument with my father many times, but he came from, you know, poor circumstances, and he, you know, rose above and went to school and blah, blah, blah. But what I try to understand, tell him that you are the exception and not the rule. But a lot of people don't envision themselves as that. They don't see that as obtainable. And a lot of those kids are realists, and they say, I'm going to be real with myself. I ain't never going to be that, so I need to accept my reality, and they settle into it. I think that's a reality for a lot of those children.
You got to say it again, and also on the same standpoint, you got those kids coming out of those circumstances. They get into the darker side of those elements. They get into the killing the dope dealing at a very young age. There's no role models around them to pull them off into that. The social programs that are going on, basketball, YMCA, all this stuff is being pulled out because of the quote-unquote not enough funding for all these things to go on. So those kids are also getting, hold on 1 second. Those kids are also sitting back like, okay, well, we don't have anything to do. All we have is negativity to do to get into and deal with each other. So what happens now?
Okay, now,
I got a question. Go ahead.
I got a question. Okay, I was listening to something that you said earlier. You were saying back in the 80s, people were raising themselves, and now people are raising themselves. So is this a cyclical pattern? Did somebody step in and intervene? And I know we're talking about where programs are being withdrawn from the community because of funding, but what honestly helps me, yes, I did have grandparents and things, but they're older. You know, I blew them off because I was young. They were old. They never knew what I was going through. But at the same time, planting a seed is nothing. A seed costs nothing. If all I needed was to see somebody the same color as me doing well, because even going, you know, being from the projects or being from the hood, quote unquote, you know what is appealing to you. Money, ride, you know, clothes and everything. That was appealing to me. But somebody was just smart in how they approached me. They said, if you like those nice things, you know, you can go about getting it this way, and you won't have to serve any jail time. You won't have to be a baby mama. You won't have to be on food stamps. You won't have to be on welfare. So because they hit me to a different game, I was able to work the hustle, go to school for free, and become an engineer.
Thank you.
So
those are people that you have been blessed. That you have been blessed. Let's put that at the end of the day, it's a blessing. Like I said, I'm a realist. I don't like to look at the negative, but I believe, and this is just me, and with a lot of people, this is by design to a certain degree. This is by design by our counterparts. And it has been going on in the circle here. You know, certain things skip generations, but they always end up coming back, just like fashion, everything else.
Girl,
it comes back, and I believe it's by design to a certain degree.
Let me say this much, because I don't want anybody to sit there and think that nobody has not, that no one has approached these children. It's just like Naomi said, it comes down to a personal choice. Someone may have very well approached every last one of those kids, but they still make the personal choice to listen or to not listen.
So don't say the seeds aren't out there. It still goes back to personal choice. Do I want that for myself? Because just like you see, I came up in Dub, and you know this, I came up in the same kind of neighborhood that you did. We were less than 5 miles away from each other because everybody we saw in the neighborhood that was riding around in those cars and out there on the block hustling, what do we also see? We also saw police cars chasing their asses down every day. We also saw the only time that they were on the news is that when they were ended up dead. We came from the same hood, dude, so you know just like I know that we all had that personal choice. You either choose to want better for yourself or not want better for yourself. And it doesn't matter what somebody says or what somebody doesn't say. I can think of a guy right now, Dr. Jamie Reed out of Arlington, Texas, who was raised right in Bankhead, and his mother told him on a daily basis, I don't know what the hell you're doing homework for because you're not going to amount to shit. Your daddy wasn't shit. Your brother's daddy wasn't shit. Your other brother's daddy wasn't shit. And the other five ain't shit either. And none of y'all going to turn out to be anything. He is a doctor. His brother is a teacher. He's got another brother who's in the military. They made a personal choice. So it doesn't matter. You can either choose to listen to those seeds or not, but it's still a personal choice that you make that I want better for myself than what's around me right now.
You're exactly right.
I think life is survival of the fittest. That those people are the exception.
No.
A lot of people just don't envision themselves. The stronger survive. A lot of people don't have that in them. They just don't have the self-confidence. A lot of these people don't love themselves. You know, it takes a strong person to persevere and rise above their circumstance. I have to wholeheartedly disagree with that.
I'm going to disagree with that from this standpoint. You can say the survival of the fittest. You can say whatever you want to say. It still goes back to a personal choice. It doesn't matter what you got in you. If you tired of living a certain way, just like a person on crack, if they tired of smoking and want to live a different life, that's what they going to do. It ain't the fact that, oh, I can't do anything better, so I'm going to smoke crack the rest of my life. That's crazy. A person has a choice to want to live better. And what we need to get back as far as relating to these children and these girls having these babies and these boys having these babies, we need to give them a better chance, a better circumstance. And I'm going to tell you like this, just like I was listening to Platinum Queen, them show, and we only got like 8 minutes left, y'all. But I was listening to Platinum Queen show, and they were talking about the kids. Just like, you know, when you think about our kids, we all do not contribute to our kids. And we talked about this so many times. We need to get back to the each one teach one mentality. I don't care if they don't want to listen, but guess what? If you say something to them, somewhere along that line, they'll remember and revert back to, hey, somebody did say something to me about this. And if they don't care about it, and that's their choice to not care about it, then they have to deal with the circumstances that come along with them not wanting to care, the choice of not wanting to care. But I care. I'm an optimist. I'm always going to be an optimist. And I think we're going to do better if we want to do better. If you tell it, you put in your mind that we're going to do better, then you're going to do better. I don't agree with that.
Well, I mean, hey, everybody, you know, opinionated was very, you know, very expressed today. We want to thank everybody who tuned in to the Little Men Show today. Great discussion on these particular topics. We probably will have to maybe go more in depth on a few of these, but we really want to thank everybody for tuning in today.
Thank Naomi.
Thank you for calling in and giving us your input, and Dub too. Most definitely. Also, Charlie Brashen and Grown Game on the chat board as well. Appreciate you all comment today on today's show. So we're going to get into the talk of the town.
Yeah, we'll do that right now.
Okay. Yeah.
What's up, world? This is your man Nick Eaton, and I'm here with the talk of the town. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'll be back.
Now that he's no longer the governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger has revealed just how much he loves his job. According to TMZ, holding that job for 8 years seriously hurt Arnold's pocket. Arnold Schwarzenegger's time as the governor of California didn't just leave the state in financial turmoil, it cost him a huge chunk of change too. The Austrian, playfully known as the Governator, told a newspaper in his homeland that his stint in Sacramento cost him nearly $200 million as a result of lost revenue from movies and endorsements. Arnold went on to say that it was all worth it in the end. Not sure Californians would agree though.
Man, sit your ass down.
Southern rapper Chamillionaire has officially parted ways with Universal Records and will no longer be allowed to drop his long-awaited third solo album, Venom. After 6 years at the label, Cam said his internal problems with Universal caused a split. According to Billboard, he is quoted as saying, "I think nowadays labels feel rap doesn't sell that much. Pop does. So what they are doing is they are trying to turn rappers into that. You infiltrated pop culture with Riding Dirty, now do it again. That's what they wanted me to be, and if I came in with something that was more me, they wouldn't support it. He also goes on to say, I have a plan, and that's why I don't want to bash my major label all day. I don't hate Universal, and I'm glad they let me out of my deal because I have an innovative way to make money now.
We don't believe you. You need more people.
This is your man, Nick Eden, and this is the Talk of the Town.
Well, thank Nick Eden for that Talk of the Town for this week. You're wrong for that.
I ain't wrong, man. I do have a question, though, and this is something I wanted to bring up a little bit later. I don't understand why is it that every time, for the last 10 years, any Republican that we've had in office has left their respective areas in some sort of financial turmoil. Why we don't get out and vote more to ensure that this doesn't happen again, I'll never know.
But we're not educated enough to vote.
California jacked up.
We ain't educated, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
He left
they
California
put him in there.
Jacked up. And
they
put him in there.
They put him in there.
Yes, they put him in there.
I can't wait to see what's going to happen to Georgia.
Man, let's make a deal. That's what's going to happen to Georgia. Let's make a deal.
No,
he probably sold half the damn state already.
Already,
yeah.
For real. So we want to thank everybody for tuning into the Middleman Show today. We had a great discussion on the war on drugs. We also talked about the racial profiling aspect of it and how it affects minorities in the country. We also discussed the reconstruction of Haiti. So we feel like the governing bodies are moving fast enough to get the country back on track. We also identified the teen pregnancy rate at a boat high school in Memphis, Tennessee, called Frazier High School, and their teen pregnancy rate. And you know, and we also identified what, you know, who's to blame for. You know, who should take more of the initiative to make the change in this particular environment for those particular kids. And everybody who tuned into the Middleman Show, hey, really appreciate it. Tell a friend to tell another friend about the Middleman Show. You can also go back and download the show on www.blogtalkradio.com/the Middleman. It is available on multiple mediums. You can also download it on iTunes as well. And if you're on Facebook, go to the Middleman Talk Show Facebook page. You can also get updates on our shows. You can be aware of what we're going to talk about each week. And we also have two new shows in which we're going to roll out in February. We have Jen and Juice, which is our co-host Jennifer Jen individual show. And we're also going to have Nick Eden's Talk of the Town show, which will be airing the first week in February. So you all please be on the lookout for that. We want to make sure that those shows get supported as well as Middleman Talks. Kevin, you have anything you want to identify?
No, I'm good, man. I'm good, man. Just waiting for these other two shows next week.
All right. Nick, anything else coming up for you that people need to be aware of?
No, not that I can think of. Right now I'm kind of low-key. Going to be in Nashville next weekend, you know, so I think I'm going to go get some cowboy boots sometime this week.
Yeah, and go to the Grand Ole Opry, huh?
Hey, when you gonna post up that video of you on the Steve Harvey show?
You know, I'm still. If somebody knows how to rip a DVR, like a DVR recorder from TV to the computer, somebody hit me up on the Middleman Facebook page or hit me up on my Facebook page and let me know how to do that. I've been trying to get the footage so I can put it up on YouTube. They actually replayed the show yesterday morning on Steve Harvey Morning Show.
You got it on what? A DVD?
On DVR. Like, you know, when you record it on the
on
like
your TV.
DVR. Yeah.
I know somebody. I had to talk to him.
Yeah. Once I figure out how to do that, then I'll be able to put the footage up on YouTube.
Okay. And y'all support our man when he comes up for the next round of the Steve Harvey Morning Show.
Yay. That will be in April. And There may be another thing. If there is, I will definitely let you guys know next week, but there may be something else coming up in store for you boys. So,
all right.
Keep a lookout.
And you got any other thing you want to address before we close out the show?
Who, me?
Dan.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. Stay cool. Have a great Martin Luther King Day. For those who get a vacation, have a great vacation day.
We don't get a vacation. We working.
Yeah, we working over here.
Yeah, me too.
Hey,
I should have been a teacher. I'm really considering it. Like, the vacation is, like, calling me.
Yes. Well,
you need to do
yeah.
it. You need to do it, so. All right.
The middleman shouted, Big Crit shouted. Yeah. Now, I ain't sure what you was tuning in to. We'll pay attention to the real talk. What we here for, so take a listen time out. Take a minute. Shout in and learn some. Put your mind to grind the world. You destined to earn some. Linda, yeah. Comment on what you hear. Let's figure out this master plan to put this thing in gear. Don't matter if you hood or you corporate. Don't guess you got a will to do way better than you were doing. Well, then you fortunate. Take a stand. Stop complaining about what you ain't got. Hating on the next man because he was dying to wreck shop. Every Sunday, tune in. Go live 6 p.m. blogtalkradio.com. The middle me. Hey. What's happening, the middleman? Hey, what's happening, the middleman? Hey, what's happening? BlogTalkRadio.com, the middleman.
Next week, going down.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Come on, boy. Come on.
Got a couple things that we're going to throw out to y'all. I mean, next week probably gonna be real interesting. Real interesting.
Oh, man, a bird just fell on me. Hold on.
A bird?
A bird. Sam Fish outside.
Oh, hold on.
Oh. Oh, boy. Hey, since I couldn't do this doing the show, I'm gonna do this. I don't care what y'all say, the birds fall.
Press the button now, hurry up.
I feel like Carlton Fame right now, man. I'm doing the Carlton
Fame. I'm out for real. Goodbye.
No.